Good morning. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church on such a crisp fall evening, morning. My name is Greg Sandin, and I'm this morning's board rep. We do have a variety of announcements about church life and evening and activities. Please read through those announcements in the order of service, and you can take those order of services home with all the announcements on them. I've got a few others as well. Our annual Suic fruit and nut sale is on again. Proceeds fund ads on public radio for Southeast Wisconsin, UU churches, and fellowships. Order forms are in the social hall. See Jim Hansen or Jerry Flakus. Our time and talent treasure auction is upon us. For this event, members and friends donate their time, talents, and or treasures, and then over the course of the 3 Sundays in October, everyone has the opportunity to bid on these donated items. Last year, over $4,900 was made from our church auction, and this year, the auction will take place on October 2nd, 9th, and 16th. Donation forms are available in the social hall. You can see Amy and Kevin C. on if you have any questions or want to talk about ideas for coming up for ideas for this year. The announcement, the back of the white page, also has more on this in your order of service. Next week is Association Sunday, so we will not be collecting for the food pantry, but for this important cause. This is an important offering to support our ministerial development for our churches, so please give generously. There will be coffee with the board and minister at 11:45 today in room 4. That's the 3rd through 5th grade room. Please come and join us for a Q&A with our new minister and board members. If you have not registered your child for religious education classes yet, please take care of that today. We do have the forms in the social hall. The deadline to register for the How of Happiness workshop is tomorrow. Registration forms are in the social hall, and completed forms should be turned into the office. So please see the order of service for more information. There will be a special workshop for families on Sunday, October 23rd. This will be from noon until 2. And the topic is bringing UU values into your home. Please, again, see the order of service for more information. Let's see if I got everything. I believe so. I invite you to greet those around you.
Good morning. Good morning.
If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign in on the guest ledger out in the foyer. There is a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Please help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have questions about our church or if you have been visiting for a while and would just like some information about becoming a member. I'd be happy to talk to you about that as well. If you're visiting us today with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they then go to the RE classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service, and if you'd like to go along to observe your child's class, you can. The nursery is just out the doors on my right and across the entry if there's a need for child care during the service. Classes do end right at 11:15, at which time you need to pick up your children from their class. We always enjoy getting to know our new guests. And if any members have brought guests today, we would be very pleased if you'd introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a great time to do so. All right. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. Our conversation corner is a good place for us to gather and further discuss the service. Please do now put your cell phones on silence mode for our service. I hope you find this morning's service fulfilling. Our speaker today is our Reverend Jim Hobart.
Karen asked me this week if she should make some purposeful mistakes in the music in order to fit the theme, but I suggested she shouldn't do that. Thank you for that beautiful opening. So any mistakes that any of us make this morning are not staged. I just want to get that clear. Let us be united now in body and in spirit. We are called to give voice and to offer our hearts and hands for religious service in this community and in the world. We are called to act with compassion toward all persons, especially those who are troubled in body and spirit. We're called to work for peace and justice here and abroad. We are called to establish a safe haven for the humiliated, the rejected, the oppressed. We are called to respond with appreciation for the mutual enrichment discovered in our differences. We are called to create here a sanctuary for music, for the visual arts, for the spoken word. We are called to discover here the joys of friendship and the enjoyment of good company. The enriching challenge of rich conversation. And so now we light our chalice, which serves as a bright symbol for our challenging common faith. I invite you now to join together in our opening hymn, number 126, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing.
Gathering number 440 from the Fragmented World. I will read the bolded print if you will read the response in italicized words. From the fragmented world of our everyday lives, we gather together in search of wholeness. Yet we know that no branch is utterly severed from the tree of life that sustains us all. We would hold fast to all of the good we inherit, even as we would leave behind us the outworn and the false.
We would escape from bondage to the ideas of our own day and from the delusions of our own fancy.
Let us labor in hope for the dawning of a new day without hatred, violence, and injustice. In this spirit we gather. In this spirit we pray.
So do people want to come down front, or do you want to keep your seats? You're invited to come down here if you'd like to. There we go. Okay, everybody find a comfortable place. I think I'll sit down too. Okay, the story this morning, the title of the story is Ish, I-S-H. And that sounds like kind of a strange title for a story, but I think you'll get the reason why it's called Ish and what it has to do with today's service when I read it to you. This is a story about Ramon and his family. Ramon loved to draw. He drew anytime, anything, and anywhere. From the flowers outside his house to his family and his cat Sniffy, to even the moon and to the stars. One day, Ramon was drawing a vase of flowers. His brother Leon leaned over his shoulder. And Leon burst out laughing. "What is that?" he asked. Ramon was so upset, he couldn't even answer. He just crumpled up the drawing and threw it across the room. Leon's laughter haunted Ramon. He kept trying to make his drawing look right, but his drawings never did. After many months and many, many crumpled sheets of paper, Ramon put down his pencil. "I'm done," he said. Marisol, his little sister, was watching him. "What do you want?" he snapped. "I was watching you draw," she said. Ramon sneered. "I'm not drawing. Go away." Marisol ran away, but not before picking up a crumpled sheet of paper. "Hey, come back here with that!" Ramon raced after Marisol up the hall and into her room. A moment's pause while I turn the page. Ramon was about to yell, but he fell silent as he saw his sister's walls. They were covered with his crumpled drawings. It was like a crumpled art gallery. "This is one of my favorites," Marisol said, pointing to the drawing Leon had laughed at all those months ago. "That was supposed to be a vase of flowers," Ramon said, "but it doesn't look like one." "Well," she said, "it looks vase-ish." vase-ish? Ramon looked closer. Then he studied all the drawings on Marisol's walls and began to see them in a whole new light. They do look ish, he said. Ramon felt light and energized. Thinking ishly allowed his ideas to flow freely. He began to draw what he felt, loose lines, and quickly springing out without any worry. Ramon once again drew and drew the world around him. Making an ish drawing felt wonderful. He filled journals with pictures. They were tree-ish and house-ish and boat-ish and afternoon-ish and sun-ish. Ramon realized he could draw ish feelings too. Peace-ish and silly-ish and excited-ish. His ish art inspired ish writing. He wasn't sure if he was writing poems, but he knew they were poem-ish. That's the way I sometimes feel about sermons, that, well, they're at least sermon-ish. One morning, Ramon had a wonderful feeling. It was a feeling that even ish words and ish drawings could not capture. And he decided not to capture it. Instead, he simply enjoyed it. And Ramon lived ishly ever after. So folks, grown-ups, children, all of us, let's remember to live ishly and not worry about perfection. Well, it's now time, I believe, for people to go to their RE classes. So during the musical interlude, head out there for your morning activity.
This is the special time in our service where we share our deepest joys and our greatest concerns with each other in our spiritual community. If you have a joy or concern that you'd like to share, raise your hand. The usher will bring you the microphone. Tell us your name and that which you'd like to share. I'll light a candle to represent your joy or concern so that we can keep that in our hearts and support you as a community. I'll light our memorial candle to help support the world in the changes that are going on right now, that these changes will actually create a better world for us all.
Carlin Wagner, would you please light a candle of concern for my Aunt Dorothy? She's got Alzheimer's. She's, I think, 85. And her children are having difficulty moving her from Arizona up to Chicago. My mom is down in Arizona there too, unable to get to her location on the other side of Phoenix. It's kind of a difficult situation for both of my parents and for Aunt Dorothy and for her children. So I just hope it all settles and they can get her into a safe location.
My name is Chris. Would you light a candle for our friend Keith Mausner, who's struggling with esophageal cancer, and another candle for Judy, who's here today to get support and love from us.
I please light a candle for my friend Marie. I introduced her to the church last May when she was here for Memorial Day. She's really, unfortunately, out of options with her cancer and is looking at end stage.
I'd like to light a candle here for my son Isaac, who's got upcoming surgery to repair his cleft palate.
I'm Amy. Two candles, please. My uncle passed away a few days ago, so a candle of concern for my aunt and my cousins. And a second candle for Kevin's Aunt Joyce. Her son, Craig, was missing since September 12th, and his body was found yesterday as an apparent suicide. So a candle of concern for Joyce and everyone in her family.
I'd like to share a candle of great joy for all of us for our solar bash, which we had yesterday in spite of the weather. I especially want to acknowledge the committee that put it together. It consisted of Mike Barra, Ray Grosh, Jim Hansen, Ann LaForest, and Barbara Howell. And I also want to thank the musicians, everybody that helped out yesterday. It was like a cast of thousands. We had musicians that played and sang for us, people that brought treats, people that helped set up twice. We set up outside during the sunshine in the morning, and then the clouds came up, and then we tore everything down and brought it inside. So in spite of all that, we had a great day.
And I'd like to thank Jerry for a wonderful job he did and the hard work he put into all of this. Made it a great success. So let's give him a hand.
My name is Terry, and I'd like a candle of joy in Washington, D.C. this weekend. They are celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps. So for all of our members who have given their time and all of those that have been ambassadors for the United States around the world for 50 years.
And I'll light our last candle for the joys and concerns that we keep close to our hearts.
Let us join together in a time of meditation and reflection and prayer. The days of our lifetime are given freely to us, offered for our delight in many blessings and enjoyments, offered too for our caring response to indifference and oppression. May our hearts stay in touch both with the world's unending beauty and with the world's ongoing humiliations, lest we fall into indulgence or into indifference. May we be true to the full human panorama, which is everywhere evident, maintaining a delicate balance, responding equally to the worst as we do to the best in our life's many times and spaces. And now, in silence, let us each continue in this spirit of meditation and reflection and prayer. Amen. Let us now rise in body or in spirit and join in hymn number 111, Life of Ages.
First reading is adapted from the letter to the Hebrews, chapters 11 and 12. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. By faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, took heed and constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was to go. These all died in faith, not having received what was promised, but having seen it and greeted it from afar,
and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on this earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that from which they had gone out from, they would have had the opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us.
Our second reading, the Poems of Our Climate, is by the poet Wallace Stevens, the American poet Wallace Stevens. And it's a very visual poem, so I invite you to get into these visual images with which he sets up the scene for this poem. Clear water in a brilliant bowl, pink and white carnations, the light in the room more like a snowy air reflecting snow, a newly fallen snow at the end of winter when afternoons return, pink and white carnations. One desires so much more than that. The day itself is simplified. A bowl of white, cold, a cold porcelain, low and round, with nothing more than the carnations there. Say even that this complete simplicity stripped one of all one's torments, concealed the evilly compounded vital eye, and made it fresh in a world of white, a world of clear water, brilliant edged. Still one would want more, one would need more, more than a world of white and snowy scents. There would still remain the never-resting mind, so that one would want to escape, come back to what had been so long composed. The imperfect is our paradise. Note that in this bitterness, delight, since the imperfect is so hot in us, lies in flawed words and stubborn sounds. Last January the 25th, the issue of the New Yorker carried a cartoon that hit close to home. Four people sit at a table enjoying drinks and snacks, and one says to the others, "I'm in the market for an easier religion." Well, if I'm honest with myself, I must admit that I might be tempted to say to him, "Oh, try our church. We're very liberal, and perhaps you'll be happy with us." But fortunately, I know better than that. We don't have what he is looking for. Over many decades of ministry, I have witnessed the eventual disappointment and disappearance of scores of people in the market for an easy religion. Of course we mean well, and we want our churches to grow. But Unitarian Universalist religious community is not marketable. This is not to say that we sometimes don't forget ourselves and at our peril use this familiar language of commerce and business in our religious life. However, a moment's thought reminds us that congregational membership is not a business proposition. Neither ministers nor laypersons or salespersons offering a religious bargain to shoppers in search for a good religious deal. We come together here as participants, not as shoppers. And we invite all people into our religious community. And we ask of ourselves, as we ask of others, to join in building relationships devoted to personal religious growth and development, and committed to societal change toward a more just and peaceful and loving world. We offer each and every person a place at the table if they are willing to come and to stay at the table with us. We come together to discuss and to deliberate our common religious mission and our shared religious goals. And I don't think that I really need to remind you that this kind of participation is no bargain. It is about cooperation in seeking and bringing about the common good for ourselves and for others. It is not seeking, discovering, and buying our heart's religious desire. And as you also know, it can be very expensive in time and effort. And liberal religion is not only demanding of our time, it is demanding intellectually and ethically. It is based in building sustaining relationships both inside the congregation and outside the congregation. And its requirements include participation in worship and in education and in self-reflection and service. Through deepened commitment and increased devotion among its people, liberal religion can create a center of personal and social transformation within the congregation and within the world. And this kind of religion certainly is never easy. Yet despite all that hard work, our religion does not offer us assurances of success. It does not provide us guarantees of happiness, or it does not promise us future rewards here on earth or hereafter. And we know that even when we put forth our very best effort, we will not fully succeed. Yes, the promised land lies out there somewhere ahead of us, and inspires us, and it calls to us. But we know that this journey, this pilgrimage, is never done. I'm reminded of Malcolm Quinn's great hymn, which is not found in our current hymn book. We move in faith to unseen goals. We strive in patience through the night, which weighs upon our doubting souls to some great realm of love and light. For still the ignorance that kills, and still the hatreds that divide, and still the strife of warring wills subdue our strength and check our pride. Yes, idealism and utopianism have a place in religion, but so does realism. And perfection is never attainable. Indeed, it can be a snare and delusion which can leave us disillusioned and cynical. Even the most optimistic of our religious forebears, Ralph Waldo Emerson, recognized that optimism has its limits. Emerson wrote in his essay, Compensation, "There is a crack in everything God has made." Now, this is a sobering statement, especially coming from Emerson. The very center of creation, and that all that issues from it is broken and cracked and imperfect. Don't we all struggle with the distance between the ideals that we envision and what we are actually able to produce? How often do our accomplishments measure up to our imaginative expectation? How often, for example, do I look at a sermon in progress and say, "Oh, if only I had started sooner. Oh, if only I had done more research, or maybe less research. If only I had another week, or another day, or even another hour. This work could have measured up to my expectation." But no matter what, the Sunday service begins, and during the hymn before the readings and the sermon, I stop and I pause, and then I come to the pulpit trembling and weak-kneed. We sing the final stanza, and in the brief silence that follows, I offer my silent prayer. This is the sermon I have to offer this morning. It is not perfect, but I offer it the very best that I can. Amen. Embracing my imperfection, I say, imperfection has a deep and profound significance for me, and I am sure that it can for all of us. Now, beyond the soothing psychology of my silent prayer, which is addressed to me, if to no one or to nothing else, is the reality that imperfection is an integral part of our human condition. And it is this which Wallace Stevens states so profoundly and so well in the poem of Our Climate. The imperfect is our paradise. Note that in this bitterness, the light, since the imperfect is so hot in us, lies in flawed world words and stubborn sounds. Imperfection is our common human lot, for there is a crack in everything God had made, and the imperfect is our only paradise. A most straightforward statement of our abiding human fallibility and imperfection comes from Benjamin Franklin. On Monday, September the 17th, 1787, on the final day of the Constitutional Convention, Franklin addressed the delegates. Too weak to deliver his speech himself, Franklin prevailed upon his fellow Pennsylvanian James Wilson to deliver his words. Hear these excerpts. "I agree to the Constitution with all its flaws, if there are such, because I think a general government necessary for us, And I doubt, too, whether any other convention we can obtain may be able to make a better constitution. And thus I consent to the constitution because I expect no better, and because I am not sure it is not the best. The opinions I have had of its errors I sacrifice to the public good. On the whole, I cannot help expressing a wish that every member of the convention who may still have objections to it would with me on this occasion doubt a little of his infallibility, and to make manifest our unanimity, put his name to the instrument. Well, Franklin persuaded 39 of the 55 delegates who attended the convention to sign the finished document. And the United States Constitution has now stood for more than 223 years. It is, as Franklin noted, imperfect. It is also a living instrument, which has shown that it is capable of growth and adaptability to shifting conditions and circumstances. Perhaps the closest the Constitution comes to perfection is Article 5. Now, I know you all know what Article 5 is. Well, that is the provision for amendment. Through amendment, the Constitution is not forever bound to the imperfections and the mistakes of the past. And beginning in 1790 with the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, the Constitution has been amended 27 times through 1992. Well, religious liberalism embraces Amendment 2, the same sense of the necessity to admit error and to be open to change. And this perspective is grounded in our religious theology. It is based in the recognition that we human beings are fallible and finite and imperfect. Neither as individuals nor as a community do we have the capacity to claim eternal, infallible, capital T, truth. The great Unitarian Universalist social ethicist James Luther Adams once said, "If people are looking for infallibility, they won't find it here." We inevitably make mistakes and missteps and errors, and all our religious truths are partial and incomplete. Even without intention, we can disrespect, we can disregard, we can hurt one another. In all our religious ways of being in community, we are regularly challenged not only to make amendments, but to make amends. Well, human imperfection is not only a limitation, it is as well an opportunity to begin fresh, to begin anew. And we begin anew not by wiping the slate clean in denial and forgetfulness, but always informed by the mistakes and the blights of the past. We begin anew by humble acknowledgement of past errors and by seeking ways to maintain right relationships in the present and for the future. This year, 2011, is the 50th anniversary of the consolidation of the American Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church of America to form the Unitarian Universalist Association. And this year is an opportune moment. It is a right time to consider our past, to engage our present, and to imagine our future. And guess what? This year is also the beginning of a developmental interim ministry which is devoted to the same ends. The full, ongoing, and imperfect course of Unitarian Universalist history is a lively experiment in which we are all engaged. These being the words of the late Unitarian Universalist Church historian Sidney Mead. Our history, the account of all these stories of our past, covers more than 450 years. Unitarians and Universalists in America began their conversation about joining ranks 155 years ago in 1856 with some non-specific suggestions about cooperation, but it was not until 100 years later in 1956 that the Unitarians and the Universalists finally established a joint commission on merger. And out of this commission and the engagement of the congregations, 75% of our churches approved moving toward what came to be termed consolidation, what is most often referred to as merger. And then it took another 5 years, including often frustrating and agonizing meetings and studies and plans, before the consolidation of these two bodies into the Unitarian Universalist Association was accomplished in May of 1961. 50 years ago, in May 1961, I was just completing my first year at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago, along with about 30 other students preparing for the ministry. Wow. Talk about imperfection. Talk about flaws and brokenness and cracks in our institutional life. Talk about errors and inequalities. Talk about sexism and racism and homophobia. Boy, that was all rampant in 1961. There were no women students in the student body. There were no openly gay students, although several others later came out of the closet. There were no students of color. At that time, there were 4 Unitarian and Universalist theological schools, and the student bodies of all 4 reflected the same patterns. In 1961, our theological schools were like our new association. At the time of consolidation, with only token exceptions, our ministers were white and male and straight. And any gay or bisexual ministers were deep in the closet. Transgender? Transgender was not even a known concept. Awareness of the challenges for those with accessibility issues was not on the horizon. And yet, despite all this, in 1961, we Unitarian Universalists felt pretty good about ourselves. We knew we weren't perfect, but we had no idea how much astonishingly hard work we still had to do. During the 50 years following 61, our association and many of our congregations have addressed these inequalities in significant ways. For example, women are now slightly more than 50% of our ministers. However, there are still questions as to whether women ministers earn as much as men, and as to whether women have an equal opportunity with men for some of our larger pulpits. Gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgendered women and men are now common in our ministry, although homophobia, of course, is not unknown in our congregations. A great challenge in our ministry and in our congregations is to establish a real place at the table for people of color. And we also continue to struggle with institutional racism, with white privilege, and the sense of white entitlement. and the imperfection that mars the lives of people of color and white people alike. To be sure, we can point to ministers of color in some of our pulpits where there were none 50 years ago. And it is true that the pews of a few of our urban congregations are no longer lily white. But we will struggle for a long time to overcome the deep crack in our shared religious life that has been imposed by the color line. And we have not come close to breaking the class code during the past 50 years. So the abiding question is not so much can we change, as it is, are we ready for change? Ready for changing our upper class religious culture and addressing our working class biases? Yes, imperfect we have been and imperfect we remain. Access has emerged as a real issue, although we have only scratched the surface in awareness and addressing the barriers. I think actually you were very fortunate to purchase a church here that does pretty well on that score. I think that two institutional change factors have influenced our positive movement during the past 50 years. In the first instance, the UUA has institutionalized departments and assigned staff groups to address the inequities and to provide support for women and minorities and those with ability issues, and to provide educational opportunities and sensitivity training for congregations and individuals. And in the second instance, women and gays and lesbians and people of color and people with accessibility issues have established support groups to help them negotiate the institutional barriers amongst us and in our congregation, as well as those that exist in the larger society. Yes, the imperfect is our paradise. Note that in this bitterness, delight, since the imperfect is so hot in us, lies in flawed words and stubborn sounds. At our best, we have embraced our liberal religious imperfections. We have made the most of our flawed words, and we have used our freedom to make choices for greater good than we could ever have imagined 50 years ago. And we are, of course, not always at our best. Nothing has been completed. And yet, even as we continue our present struggles, sometimes new and sometimes overwhelming and sometimes great challenges appear. And yesterday we spent the day, many of us, on one of those issues, the environmental instabilities that we have created and abetted. And there are many others, the mounting injustices and the inequities of class and race, the international instability and volatility that's compounded by oppression and religious intolerance. It goes on and on, immigration and health and education. Yes, religious liberals, however good our intentions, will not save the world. Not all by ourselves, not if we expect imperfection. But can we turn away? Our religion challenges us to add our imperfect hands and hearts to the common struggles of all people. And our religion offers us no promises of success or guarantees of happiness. Indeed, if there is a reward, it comes in the shared work and the shared living. And if we catch a glimpse of paradise, it is the soul-satisfying knowledge that our flawed and stubborn lives have counted for something. So as the letter to the Hebrews says, Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every imperfection which clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. Amen. Ah, there you are. I knew Greg was out there someplace. We can take a few minutes, I think, for polylog.
So our polylog is a time in our service for the congregation to share reflections and personal insights with each other. Just raise your hand and one of the ushers will bring a microphone to you.
I'm Joanne, and in honor of today's service, Emma Gorell has shared a graffiti-style painting with us that says, "Good Enough." And if you'd like to look at it more, it will be on the altar after the service.
I'm Barbara. Having come from the Catholic background, actually I feel that I've joined a church that is much more difficult to live up to than the Catholic faith ever was, because now I'm really looking at issues and I'm looking for justice and I'm looking to help, and there aren't enough arms and there isn't enough of anything to live up to what we're really trying to live up to in this congregation.
Right over there, Jim.
Perfect. We'd be having more than one microphone. I think we'd be challenged to define what is perfect, because perfect for one is not necessarily viewed as perfect by all, and the other is, I think, that the cracks show us where we have room to grow.
I'm Karen. A while ago, I was thinking about imperfection and imperfections in myself and in my family. And I was thinking of accepting imperfection and then embracing imperfection and the difference. And I came to embracing being what I wanted to think about, because I think it implies doing it with more heart.
I just wanted to, this is Carlin Wagner, Barbara sounded really overwhelmed, and I've been at that spot so often, and Duke and I too, all the time, just overwhelmed with how much needs to be done and all the problems and everything. And I just always have to come around to just something is better than nothing, so just keep walking a little bit at a time, right?
We'll make this the last one. I would suspect I'm not alone with having at least one parent who was a perfectionist. Dealing with that as a kid is a lot different than dealing with that when you get older. Things start to come out that you don't want in terms of your own behavior. Embracing imperfection, for me, I kind of need to be slapped full in the face to put it aside. And I'm thankful for the experience this summer
with our youth working on homes in Appalachia. That whole experience was fraught with imperfection, but the results that we all got out of it were kind of perfect.
Thank you for sharing.
This is the time in our service when we collect the offertory to support our spiritual community. If you are visiting today, please know that you are a welcome guest and that a contribution is not expected. The offering is given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values. Please join me in reading the congregational affirmation, 461. And again, I'll have you read the italicized words. We must be saved. Nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime. Nothing true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as from our own. And please stand as you're willing and able to sing our closing hymn number 114, Forward Through the Ages.
Thank you.
inherit an honored religious tradition. We serve a worthy religious cause. We envision a brighter world community. Therefore, let us go forth to our days, one strong body, moving into the future with confidence, with gratitude, and with songs of praise. Amen.